Let me thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you today. It is and will always be an incredible honor to sit in for Rush. Senator Tom Cotton's going to join us, talk about the looting that the Democrats are doing to your money in relation to the bailout bill, the help bill, the relief bill for the Wuhan flu. He's coming up. We're going to join now a Fox News town hall with the President of the United States and the pandemic response team. We'll see how this goes, and we'll have Senator Cotton coming up. So we're going to join
them. Let's stop drilling oil. They had things in there that were terrible. Windmills all over the place and all sorts of credits for windmills that killed the birds and ruined the real estate, right? A lot of problems. And I said, I'm not signing this
deal.
Over
$2 trillion.
Now they've renegotiated.
It's hard to avoid some of those trap doors, you could argue.
But we have great things for not only companies. Forget the companies. The companies are nothing other than they are an employer of thousands and thousands of people, and they pay them very well. We want to protect our workers. I want to protect our workers. Workers first. Mm-hmm. But you have to protect companies like Boeing. They had a real bad year, let's face it, with the problems. And they were in trouble before this. And then all of a sudden this happened. We can't lose a Boeing. And we can't lose some of these companies. And companies, frankly, Bill, that were solid as like AAA companies, because of what's happened over the last couple of weeks, they go from AAA to being like they could use a hand.
Tough time.
We can't, right. Yeah. We can't lose those companies. If we lose those companies, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of jobs, millions of jobs. The faster we go back, the better it's going to be. We have a pent-up energy that's going to be unbelievable. We're going to bring it back fast. I really believe that.
I've got a lot more questions, sure. And so does my colleague Harris Faulkner. I'll allow her to rejoin the conversation now. Harris.
Do I have an earplug here?
I'll help you out.
If I could do that.
Go ahead, Harris.
Hello, Mr. President. I'll relay
and translate.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. President. So good to see you today. This will be a little bit to relay. I understand you guys are going back and forth on the economy and employers. But more than 66% of people are employed by small businesses. The VP talked a little bit about this. We hear you dropping big companies' names. The question here is, how do you shore up both as you look forward?
Yeah, the question's a good one. And it's pointed, you're talking about Boeing, and yet you've got, two-thirds of American businesses are small businesses.
Right.
And you think about what they're trying to do in terms of adjusting to this new reality that's been thrown on them. What will you do for small business?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say that Harris is one of my favorite people. And I didn't hear a word she said, and I was hoping it wasn't too devastating a question. But she is a fantastic person. I have to say that, okay? Now that I've said it, because I can't hear Harris. But no, the bill is very much focused on the small business person. It's very much focused on small companies, including restaurants and all sorts of small companies. And what people don't realize, you know, you talk about these massive, we have the greatest companies in the world. You add them all up, and the small businesses are just about equal in size to these massive companies, of which we have many also. It's the engine of our country, small business. This bill is absolutely aimed at the small business and the worker and the workers of those small businesses and the owners. The owners are going to need help. They're going to need some loans. They're going to need things. And we're going to be able to take care of them because we don't want those small businesses to go out of business, nor do we want the big businesses to go out of business.
When they said, Mr. President, we got to shut this down, how hard did you push back?
Well, I'll tell you, I never heard of such a thing. We've had flus where we lose 36,000. We've lost as many, I guess, as 78,000 people in 1 year. And they came in and they said to me, sir, we're going to have to close the country. I said, what are you talking about? Well, we have a virus. It's coming in. And I knew that. And I made the early decision with China. So I already closed it off to China. And that was a long time before they came in. But they came in, experts, and they said, we're going to have to close the country. I said, we've never closed the country before. This never happened before. Are you serious about this? We are going to take this country that's fully employed, where we have 160 million people working, and you're telling me we have to close it, and people are going to go out of business, and they're going to go bankrupt, and they're not going to have jobs? What are we talking about here? Don't forget, this has never been done. We've had flus before. We've had viruses before. So this is something new, and this is why I say we have to. I gave it 2 weeks, and I guess by Monday or Tuesday, it's about 2 weeks, and we'll assess at that time. and we'll give it some more time if we need a little more time. But we have to open this country
up. When they came to you and had that conversation with you, how long did it take you to accept that new reality?
Well, I accept things. I understand things very quickly. I mean, I understood exactly what they were saying. But we can socially distance ourselves and go to work, and you'll have to work a little bit harder. You can clean your hands five times more than you used to. You don't have to shake hands anymore with people. That might be something good coming out of this. Although I must tell you, as a politician, it's a lot warmer when you walk into a crowd and you're shaking a lot of people's hands. You love those people.
I'd agree with you.
They love me and I love them, you know, but it is a little bit colder. But you won't be shaking hands for at least a while, and things will happen. But we have to put the country to work. Look, you're going to lose a number of people to the flu, but you're going to lose more people by putting a country into a massive recession or depression. You're going to lose people. You're going to have suicides by the thousands. You're going to have all sorts of things happen. You're going to have instability. You can't just come in and say, let's close up the United States of America, the biggest, the most successful country in the world by far. You know, when I came in, when I was elected, and you knew this number, China was going to overtake us in the year 2019. It wasn't even close. We went way up, and they didn't. We've done great. They pay us a fortune in tariffs and everything else, and yet we have a good relationship with them. We just signed a trade deal. But we're the number one in the world by far. And now a few people walk into the Oval Office and say, sir, we have to close up the country.
And
I said, what are you talking about?
And that, Mr. President, must have been a very difficult thing to accept.
One of the most difficult decisions I've ever made, because I knew that when you do it, as soon as you do it, you're going to drop. I mean, they're talking about 20 or 25 points of GDP. Nobody's ever heard of 25 points. If we went down a point, that's a big deal. Now, all of a sudden, you're basically turning off the country. I said, this has never been done before. What are you talking about? But we understand it. You have hot spots. But we've had hot spots before. We've had horrible flus. I mean, think of it. We average 36,000 people. Death. I'm not talking about cases. I'm talking about death. 36,000 deaths a year. People die, 36, from the flu. But we've never closed down the country for the flu. So you say to yourself, what is this all about? Now,
how did you?
It's never been done.
How did you process that?
Not good. I wasn't happy about it. And I also knew that I had to do it because, look, with Turkey, I give this as an example, in Syria, I said, sign a deal with the Kurds, make peace. Erdogan, he didn't want to. He's a man who loves Turkey, and I have a very good relation. I said, sign a deal. He didn't really want to. The Kurds didn't really want to. And it went on, you know, the so-called safe zone a few months ago. I said, sign a deal. Do me a favor. Sign a deal. Get it done. They didn't really want to. All of a sudden, they start fighting. And it was vicious, and other countries got involved. Now I say, let's sign a deal. They said, okay, we'll sign a deal. We needed a period because I don't think, if I would have not done it, we would have been unbelievably criticized for not doing it. But it's never been done before.
One more.
Somehow, the word got out that this is the thing we're supposed to be doing. Now, we've had some really bad epidemics and other things. I mean, we're going this pandemic, but we've had bad epidemics. I'm sure they could have been called pandemics. But we never did a thing like this before. But I had to do it. It's been very painful for our country and very destabilizing for our country. And we have to go back to work much sooner than people thought. And people can go back to work, and they can also practice good judgment.
One last question, then we'll get back to our viewers here, too. Okay. A month ago, the CDC had an initial test that failed. At that moment, late February, you said, it's perfect. And it wasn't perfect. So what happened there in the early stages?
Well, what I said
in late February?
What I said is perfect was my conversation with the head of the Ukraine. That's what I really said is perfect. Okay, that was another whole scandal, nonsense, a total, you know, witch hunt. But this one is a much different thing. We had other administrations, not just the last one. They built up a platform. They built up a test. But the test was no good. it didn't handle large numbers of people. It was okay for a very small group, but not for a large group. So we had to break it down.
Did the CDC screw up, or did you screw
no,
up?
No, we did not screw
where
up.
Where did this
And
go
I don't
wrong.
Think CDC screwed up either. They had a test that would have worked for a small group of people. In other words, for a normal problem. I don't think anybody could have, in all fairness to CDC, and this is a big government agency, and they're very good people in there, but nobody ever expected a thing like this. Nobody would say that millions and millions of people would have been tested. So what we did is we broke that egg, we broke that system, and we've created a new system that now we're doing unbelievably big numbers, and it's set for the future should we ever need it again. I hope we don't need it again.
Hey, that was part of the Fox Town Hall with the President of the United States responding to questions about the virus, and we'll keep track of that and see what's going on. It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh. Tom Cotton, Senator Tom Cotton joins us. Coming up to talk about the looting of the Treasury and of your retirement that the Democrats are attempting as they want to shove everything into this relief bill. That's next on the Rush Limbaugh program on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. Joining us now, Senator from Arkansas, Tom Cotton, has been in the midst of watching the Democrats attempt to shove every possible thing they want to do anyway into a massive spending bill that's designed to help people who've been hit by what we've had to do as a nation in the midst of the COVID-19. Senator Tom Cotton, welcome to Rush's program. It's Todd Herman filling in. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Todd. Good to be on with you.
You know what, Senator? It's difficult for me to be stunned, and I don't know that I'm stunned, but I'm so unbelievably angry to see that Obama phones are back, that the Kennedy Center is getting funded, that we are building retirement accounts for local journalists in the midst of this national disaster. I know you're a senator. You have to keep your temper on the floor. But tell me, man to man, are you angry about this?
Todd, it was completely disgraceful, shameful, what the Democrats did yesterday. The Republican senators had worked in good faith over the weekend with many of our Democratic counterparts to craft different parts of this very large and very complex bill, and we thought we were in a good place on Sunday, and here comes Nancy Pelosi flying back from San Francisco, rolling a 1,400-page grenade into the room in the form of her own bill, which, just to give you a sense of scale, Todd, is about three times longer than our bill. And as I pointed out yesterday on the floor, it had all these ideological wish list items from the far left that they've never been able to pass because they're not popular. They have nothing to do with the coronavirus. They want to take over our state's election or our nation's election machinery when they can't even count their own votes in the Iowa Democratic caucuses. They want airplanes to be carbon neutral by 2025, which I'm sure doesn't apply, by the way, to Nancy Pelosi's plane. They want to forgive all of the debt the post office owes to taxpayers. Now, look, the post office has struggled for some time. We've worked to try to give them some temporary relief to restructure their business model, and I have the highest degree of respect for all the men and the women of the Postal Service, many of whom are out right now delivering the mail in the middle of a pandemic. But is it really time in the middle of that pandemic to be talking about forgiving the loans that taxpayers have made to the Postal Service? I could go on and on, Todd, but it's just disgraceful how the Democrats used this legislation to try to shoehorn in all of their ideological hobby horses. I know that President Trump overnight and Senator McConnell have drawn a firm line and said they're not going to accept those kind of things. Negotiations are ongoing. But, Todd, we could have probably passed a bill Sunday night if the Democrats hadn't demanded all these ridiculous things.
Senator Tom Cotton's with us from Arkansas. This requires speculation on your part. And here's so I'm going to ask the question. I just want to set it up this way, Senator. We're taking calls from Americans saying, look, I'm an elderly American. And you know what? If it risks my life to bring the economy back, I'll do it. We didn't ask for these calls. And it's shocking the number of people who are calling to say that. We are taking calls from business owners who are saying, look, I want to stay open. And they also have respect for the fact that there are other people who are, you know, deeply vulnerable to this disease and this virus. We're looking at this third way. So I hear these Americans making these sacrifices, Senator. And I have to ask you, it's even a banal question. Legitimately, is there any sense of shame from Nancy Pelosi? Do you see any looks of shame on the faces of your Democrat colleagues, or are they just all in on this nonsense?
The only thing I see from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer is smirks, gleefully rubbing their hands together at how much of your money they're going to be able to get Democratic hands on, how much of your life they're going to be able to take over by trying to hijack this badly, badly urgent legislation to try to stop this pandemic and try to stop some of the suffering from the pandemic.
Is there anything that can be done once President Trump wins re-election and we have more Republican seats? Is there anything that can be done procedurally to take a relief bill like this? I've been thinking about this, you know, as I was prepping for the show. Can we put a limit on a relief bill to say it handles one thing? Well, I would do this way. Starts with the named population. Here's who we're helping. Here's the size of the population. Here's what we're doing. And everything must be related to that. Is there anything we can do to stop this utter looting?
Todd, the easiest solution to that is what we're doing now. It's President Trump, Senator McConnell, and a united Senate Republican front just saying, no, we're drawing a line and saying we're not going to tolerate any of this. We will listen to reasonable requests. And in fact, I've laid some out, either on the Senate floor or on social media, saying, you know what, regrettably, I think 3 months of enhanced unemployment may not do the job because I think the effects of this virus are going to be so severe and long-lasting. So I'd be willing to give a fourth month. I'm willing to give more money to our hospitals because, again, regrettably, I think many of them are going to be overwhelmed. But to add in things like money for an opera house in Washington, D.C., where Nancy Pelosi likes to take her rich friends, or demanding carbon neutrality for airplanes, it's just ridiculous. That's why we've drawn the line, and that's why I think ultimately the Democrats will give in on all those demands, Todd, because they know that it's politically untenable.
Would this be easier for us to have an honest movement on this if the media was not covering for the Democrats? I don't know, Senator Cotton, if you saw the New York Times evolving headline where they started by saying, truthfully, the Democrats are holding up the stimulus plan. Then they added that, oh, they're trying to get protection for workers. They kept evolving it to cover for the Democrats. Would it be easier if the media wasn't doing that?
Well, that is certainly a difference between the two parties, Todd, is that the Democrats know when they engage in such blatant political gamesmanship that the media is going to carry water for them. And the best example, as you outline, is the evolving headlines of the New York Times that goes from what happened, Democrats blocked the bill, to, oh, there was just some kind of partisan divide in the city. Too bad. There's no motive actor there. Nobody's responsibility. It was just a naturally occurring partisan divide.
Imagine that.
But in the end, again, their position is so preposterous, and the president and Senate Republicans have drawn such a firm line that I think that they'll have to back off of it. The American people won't tolerate this much longer.
Well, I sure hope that. Appreciate you joining us on short notice, Senator Tom Cotton, senator from Arkansas. And thanks for fighting this battle, coming on and speaking out. We appreciate you very much, Senator Cotton. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Todd.
All right, we'll come back. It's Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EAB Network. I want to get to the phone calls, 800-282-2882, and get your voice in this conversation and return to talking about herd immunity and other ways we can fight this virus and bring the economy back. Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh. There is normal morality, and I understand that different faiths and different views of morality, and that people can be atheists and have moral structures, etc. I understand that. There is a morality. Then there is a Washington, D.C. morality. It's different. Then there is the elitist in Washington, D.C., and that's a different reality, even beyond that. Further, there is a moral structure within the elites of the Democrat Party that is empty of feeling. It is empty of anything but hubris and pursuit of power and control, and it is based upon their customers. You are a product in this bill to them. You just heard Senator Cotton talk about this wish list of leftism they're putting in this bill. You're a product. Your pain is a product they can sell. You think of the coldness of this. You have Americans who are sick. You have Americans who are scared. You have Americans who are scared of becoming sick. You have businesses shaking and perhaps falling. You have people losing their jobs. Our receptionist lost two of her three jobs. I was just talking to her this morning. And you have Nancy Pelosi going to her customers saying, I can sell you their pain. So she goes to the Kennedy Center. She goes to her rich donors there. I mean, this is the one that tops it all. Kennedy Center doesn't have lobbyists. It's just a place she likes to go. And I've been there, and it's beautiful, and it's filled with the elites. I took my daughter there to see the Nutcracker. We got the tickets from a friend of mine. Everybody there was rich. I saw the parking lot. So who's her customer then? The people she goes to the opera with are her customers. She can go say, I got $35 million for this, and all I had to do was sell the pain of the American people. Bitter clingers. You go further into this and some of the things that she's selling. She's selling the unions more collective bargaining power in the midst of this pain. In the midst of people losing jobs. There are 20,000 people with Boeing furloughed out where I'm in Seattle today. And she's selling their pain to the union bosses. Not to help them, but to the union bosses. And in the case of the local journalist, she's not even responding to lobbyists. She wants, in this relief bill, she wants a retirement plan for local journalists, for regional journalists, city-based journalists. She's buying their support, even more bias with your pain. You are a product. You're a product. We took calls from people in the first hour who are sacrificing. And Nancy Pelosi sees that as something she can merchandise. So she goes to big college. And she says, I'm going to wipe out these loans. It's a PR boost for you. It's a PR boost for me. She's buying votes and she's going to big college, which 90%, 95%, 98% of their donations go back to the Democrat Party. She's buying them. She's bought their points of view. They'll put out any research paper that advances any leftism, any sort of leftist cause. They'll put out. She's bought that. She's selling you to them. She's selling your pain to them. It's Nancy Pelosi. I've got pain to sell. I've got desperation to sell. I've got bad health to sell. Get your desperation here. You want the two-pack college? I'll give you a two-pack. We'll write off the debt for your students, and we'll do a $9.5 billion giveaway. I read the most fascinating article about those colleges. They could, the private colleges, the big ones, the big elite colleges, most of them could take their endowments and pay for legitimately free college, not taxpayer supported, legitimately free, just based upon the interest payments from their endowments. And the endowments would never go down. They'd never decrease in value, not based upon the payments to the students. But she will sell your pain to them. And so she seeks even more influence with them by saying, do you see how cold she is? This is how cold she is. Then we get to the power seeking. See, it's cyclical. She serves her customers who are the big donors. They are the unions. They are big college. They are big insurance. They're the leftist collective. Then she gets into, okay, so now I get some of mine. Also in a Corona Wuhan flu relief bill, you have Nancy Pelosi saying she wants to have same-day voter registration. Well, nothing can go wrong there. Don't worry. You can't go say something's going to go wrong when you flood the polls with same-day voter registration. Right? That's not a wish list from leftists, except it is. You've read of the Cloward-Piven strategy. You know what that is? America runs on debt, give it more debt. America runs on migrants, legal migrants, then flood the system. America runs on law and order, then flood the court systems with criminals. Cloward Piven, I think it was Francis Fox Piven was the author of the motor voter legislation that President Clinton signed. So now Nancy Pelosi is saying we need same-day registration. I wonder if you could rush a whole bunch of people into a swing district, have them same-day register, and have their votes be presumed to count and swing an election. What do you need to swing an election in a swing district? 1,000 people? Then you have this, ballot harvesting. You read about this in California. This is where third-party groups go knock on the door. Hi, I'm Bill from the Democratic Party. I'd like to harvest your ballots. Have you voted? Why, yes, Bill, I have. Here's my ballot. It goes to the next house. Hi. And he's looking at his voter registration, and you're Republican. Hi, I'm Bill, a concerned American collecting ballots. I will take them to the mailing place for you. Would you like to give me your ballot? And some trusting person says, sure, you take him in for me. I can save the postage. And then Bill goes and burns them. So she's putting that into this, into a relief package. James Robinson, pardon me, Robbins, wrote a great piece on this in USA Today. He often writes for National Review, Board of Contributors, author of This Time We Win. A lot of these examples are from him, this work. So what am I telling you? Judge people by what they do in a crisis. Lots of people can be great, upstanding citizens, or appear to be, until there's a crisis. You're seeing the actual Nancy Pelosi. You're seeing the woman that when I lived in D.C., I learned that every morning, she goes down to have her hair done professionally, to have her skin worked on professionally. Every morning. That's her focus. And what are you to her? What is your pain? What is your worry? It's a product that she can sell for money or influence, or in the case of the Kennedy Center, for giggles. Hey, look what I did. I, the great Pelosi. Some of the seats in the Kennedy Center looking kind of rough. Got some new velvet for him. Some new lights in the parking center. Plus the wine glasses. I saw a scratch on one of them. It's supposed to be crystal. That's your Nancy Pelosi. And the left. It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. Thanks for all the notes on social media. Oh, and Bo Snerdly just hit me up. Said, hey, you forgot to mention, or he didn't say this, great time to mention Christine Pelosi. I think that was a rant I just went on about Pelosi selling you and selling your pain to her donors and her buddies and just for giggles. Christine Pelosi. This is Nancy Pelosi's daughter. So Rand Paul tests positive for the Wuhan virus, and she comes out and says, oh, yeah, Rand Paul's neighbor was right. The neighbor who went and beat Rand Paul up and cost him part of a lung, which probably put him in the high-risk category for this, he was right? This is Nancy Pelosi's daughter. Apple, meet the tree. You recognize the tree, Apple? That's from hence you came. Let's talk to Larry in Deer Park, New York. Larry, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. It's Todd Herman filling in. I think we're going to go to Larry. No, we're not going to go to Larry, says New York. Oh, let's do Edward and Raleigh. Edward and Raleigh, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman filling in. Hi, Edward.
Hi there, Dad. Thank you for having me on the program. Miss you, Rush. What an honor it must be for you to step in for those big shoes there.
Oh, absolutely.
Shout out to my wife. She got 18 wheels under her. Hey, but to the point, I think the senators should not vote for this bill, not allow the liberals to leftists to get their stuff in there. If it does pass, what do you think about the president doing that line item vetoes?
I don't believe the president has the right to do the power to do the line item veto. If he did, it would be a great thing in this case where he could go through and actually line item the veto. Or do the line item veto. I'd like to see that. I think, you know, I share your concern on this. And then I also want to live, since you gave such a great honor to Rush, I want to live in reality. And part of the reality here is that he has the Democrats to deal with. He's only going to get out what he can, what they'll allow. And that's a reality he has to deal with, right? So what would you prefer to see? Actually, what would you prefer to see them do in this case? How would you prefer to see the aid structured?
The aid structure should just be towards health care and fighting the virus. And anything outside of that shouldn't be there. And it shouldn't go from a $2 billion request to a $2 trillion request.
I couldn't agree more. And obviously the fraud and what Nancy Pelosi is doing, she's looting. I mean, I can't put it any more clearly. It's a crime of opportunity. She is a high-end, big-money looter. You know what? I'll just say this, and tell me if I'm wrong, Edward. What she's doing is worse looting than someone who sees a guitar store in the midst of a hurricane and says, I'm going to go steal all those guitars. Because she's actually stealing twice. She's, you know, selling someone's pain. She's doing this with tax money, and she's doing it on a massive level as we're in the midst of a national emergency. Doesn't that make her a worse looter?
It does. And then, and also consider this, if Trump gives her what she wants, then we don't need Biden, right?
That's one way to look at it. I don't think we need Biden at all. I appreciate the call, Edward. Thanks very, very much. We've been talking about the balance the president must walk. He's announcing, he is transmitting to you, he has to walk a balance. There's the health concern. We've got vulnerable people, two classes of patients, one extremely vulnerable. If they come in contact with the virus, they will die. They will die. The other class of people, they'll be greatly health impacted. I am saying we can care for those people and keep those people in quarantine and not in jail cells. Someone said, lock them up. No, I mean care for them and let younger people into the society to, A, build herd immunity so the virus dies more quickly, we become safer, and B, get the workplace back together. I'm not pretending to be a doctor or an epidemiologist. This is just based upon the studies I've read this weekend. Bill in Houston, Texas, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. It's Todd Herman filling in. Hi, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on. Listen, the point I want to make is I want to backstop your comment about the president making a balance here, and that is that I haven't heard anyone talk about the numbers, but if we're going to spend $2 trillion on this disease and there are, say, 30,000 people that die, that means we're going to spend $66 million per person. And for that price, we should really be concentrating on the old folks and sequestering them. And
yes,
for that matter, you can give old people like me who stay in our home anyway, you can give us free Beluga caviar and Dom Perignon champagne, and you'll still come out financially ahead. So my message is make us old folks stay at home. You young people get back to work, and let's get the economy rolling again.
Yeah, this is what I've been trying to say throughout the show, and some people have misconstrued this, Bill, to imagine in their mind that what I'm saying is, hey, I'm all excited to put at risk the lives of senior citizens, etc., or that this is World War II, and I'm marching out the battle. No, I'm saying that there's a balance presidents must walk. I love your math, right? Math is powerful. That's a great way to think of it. Great call. How are things in Houston? You guys okay down there?
Absolutely. I think this is, it's pretty much of a day-to-day. It's a non-event to most of us.
All right. I hope it continues to be that. Appreciate you calling Rush the Show. It's Todd Herman filling in. I'll come back. I want to go a little early to the break because I'd like to come back, and I want you to hear some words of optimism from the Maharishi himself. I want you to hear this. We come back. It's Todd Herman filling in for Rush on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. Appreciate you hanging with us, all the comments and social media, etc. I wanted to play this clip, and we'll get to these next hour. The EIB team has put together some words from the Maha, from Maharishi. And they're important words. We're going to get to these next hour. One is Rush really talking about optimism. And you don't get to do what Rush has done and build what he's done without optimism. You always are flying in the face of people who say that can't be done. Always. And people who want to believe it can't be done because they're invested in believing it can't be done because they don't want others to do it because they didn't get to do it. And I want you to hear the optimism. I want you to hear something else that I think is vitally important, because I'm seeing that people are wanting to misunderstand what we're talking about. When we're talking about our nation and we're talking about the president transmitting that he intends to get the economy rolling again, That's what he intends to do. I don't hear him saying end people's lives. And he doesn't mean that. He doesn't mean it at all. When you are the president of 330 million people, there is a balance that must be achieved in a pandemic. Number one is the health of the American people, quite clearly. Number two is the health of the nation, all of us. And the health of the nation is, we are not our economy, but our economy is a store for us, a store of our life energy. Our combined life energy is in that economy. Your work and my work is in this economy. No matter what you do in your job, your work and my work is reflected in this economy. That's our life energy. And we can use that. We can waste that life energy. We could decrease it. We could go through and shut down the country altogether, shut down the economy altogether, and not put a date certain on when we're going to bring it back. And what happens to energy in, you know, when it's stored, when batteries? I mean, if you don't use them, eventually the energy is gone. So our health is tied to our economy. Our long-term health is very tied to it. And if you can imagine a circumstance greater than that, be my guest, Todd Herman for Rush.